This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Please, let's join Pastor Sandy in the book of Numbers chapter 6 through 10 with today's study.
Numbers chapter 6. Genesis is the book of origination. There we learn about the origin of the heavens and earth, the beginning of man, the beginning of sin, the beginning of the nation Israel. It's all about origination. Exodus is the book of salvation. Israel falls into sin and bondage in Egypt, but God sends them a deliverer to set his people free. And God has done the same for us, salvation. Leviticus is a book about dedication. For at Mount Sinai, God taught his people to make sacrifice and to offer up their worship to the Lord. They were to be holy just as God is holy. Which brings us to the book of Numbers. We've had origination, we've had salvation, we've had dedication, and the book of Numbers is all about organization. For now that the nation has been set free and the people have dedicated themselves to God, now God wants his people to camp together and to march in harmony with one another. Last week we saw how that God told Moses to take a census and to account for each Israelite. He tells the tribes where to camp. He issues their marching order, the alignment as they march through the wilderness. He tells the Levites how to transport the tabernacle. In other words, God gets his people organized. As the old saying goes, don't agonize, organize. God calls the nation an army. And anyone knows that a successful army is the one who can coordinate its efforts. Authority, accountability, mobilization become keys. And this is the pattern that I believe God desires for believers in Jesus. For once you're saved and have dedicated yourself to worship God, you also need to come under the authority and organization of the church. You need to find your place in the camp. And yet too many Christians buck at God's will at this very point. They want to be a lone ranger for Jesus. They'd rather go their own way, set up their own camp, march to their own drummer. They fail to see that we can do more together than we could ever do apart. All too often, leading the church is like herding cats. Ever tried herding cats? People can be finicky and fickle and freewheeling and have their own agenda, and the result is a weakened church. To be victorious, we need to be organized. Which brings us to chapter 6. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when either a man or woman consecrates an offering to take the vow of a Nazarite to separate himself to the Lord." Now chapters 3 through 4 discuss the special duties of the Levites. But they were not the only ones who could make a unique dedication of their lives to God. Any Hebrew from any tribe could take the vow of the Nazarite. The word Nazir means to set apart. And a Nazarite was a person who set himself apart to God in a special way, who took a special vow. Sometimes the vow lasted a month. At other times it lasted a year. Some people became lifelong Nazarites. You know a couple by name. Such was the case with Samson. He was a lifelong Nazarite. Probably Samuel and John the Baptist also fell into that category. The vow of the Nazarite consisted of three commitments. Verse 3 tells us, "He shall separate himself from wine and similar drink. He shall drink neither vinegar made from wine nor vinegar made from similar drink. Neither shall he drink any grape juice." Welch's was out of the question. "Nor eat fresh grapes or raisins. All the days of his separation, he shall eat nothing that is produced by the grapevine from seed to skin." You know, in Bible times, grapes were known as God's candy, and they are sweet to the taste. Give me a big bowl of grapes and sit me in front of a football game, and I'm a happy man for a couple of hours. Wine, too, was a symbol of joy. And the fruit of the vine was synonymous with physical pleasure. But you see, the Nazarite said no to grape juice, no to the grape vine. He lived not for physical pleasure, but for spiritual satisfaction. Verse 5 tells us, "In all the days of the vow of his separation, no razor shall come upon his head. Until the days are fulfilled for which he separated himself to the Lord, he shall be holy. Then he shall let the locks of the hair of his head grow." The Nazarite also gave up basic grooming. He was forbidden to trim his hair or shave his beard. When you saw a Nazarite, his hair was always nappy and knotty and gnarly. For a Nazarite, every day was a bad hair day. The Nazarite would have never won the GQ award, trust me. Obviously, the Nazarite wasn't very concerned about his physical appearance, and this was the point of his vow. God wanted him to be far more concerned about internal beauty than about external beauty. And the third component of his vow is in verse 6. "All the days that he separates himself to the Lord, he shall not go near a dead body." Funerals and viewings were off limits. "He shall not make himself unclean, even for his father or his mother, for his brother or his sister, when they die, because his separation to God is on his head. All the days of his separation, he shall be holy to the Lord." Even if the deceased was a close family member, the Nazarite was not to be associated with death. He was a reminder to the people around him that real life is eternal, not just temporal. 1 John chapter 2, verse 16, sums up the world system that you and I live in today. This is how the world operates. Call it the World Wide Web. "For all that is in the world," and here's what's in the world, "the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world." This is the world. This is the sinister world that we live in. This is the philosophy by which this world operates. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life. These are the three temptations that we face on a daily basis. The lust of the flesh, which is the desire to feel great. Oh, how people live for that. Drugs, alcohol, sex, just whatever I can do to feel great. The lust of the eyes, the desire to look great. Cosmetic surgeries and liposuctions and makeup and the whole rest of it goes into that category. And then the pride of life, the desire to be great. Hey, this is how the world operates. This is what people want today. They want to feel great. They want to look great. Ooh, they want to be great. Everyone wants to feel great. You've heard the ad, "Obey your thirst." That's what how the world operates. And then everyone wants to look great. I tried to find a picture of Andre Agassi, but this was the best I could come up with. Image is everything. You remember those advertisements? And then everybody wants to be great. I like this ad. You can't read it, but it says, "Go on, be a tiger. You can be a champion too. You too can be great." This is how the world operates. But understand, the vow of the Nazarite was the antithesis to the values of this world. For the Nazarite was a walking billboard for the values of God. The Nazarite taught by his lifestyle that real joy is not found in physical, but in spiritual sources. That a lasting identity is based not on external beauty, but on internal beauty. And our ambition should not be for temporal gain, but for eternal glory. You see, you and I need to be spiritual Nazarites. We too need to be walking advertisements for the values of God. We need to demonstrate to the people around us that real life is found in the spiritual, not the physical, in the internal, not the external, in the eternal, not the temporal. Take joy from the Holy Spirit, not distilled spirits. Develop an inner beauty, not just an outward facade, and reach for goals that are forever, not those things that fade away. But what if a Nazarite was riding home on the bus when all of a sudden the guy next to him drops dead of a heart attack and he comes in contact with a dead person and breaks his vow? Well, verse 9 tells us what he should do. "And if anyone dies very suddenly beside him, and he defiles his consecrated head. Then he shall shave his head on the day of his cleansing. On the seventh day he shall shave it. Then on the eighth day he shall bring two turtle doves or two young pigeons to the priest, to the door of the tabernacle of meeting, and the priest shall offer one as a sin offering and the other as a burnt offering, and make atonement for him because he sinned in regard to the corpse. And he shall sanctify his head that same day. He shall consecrate to the Lord the days of his separation and bring a male lamb in its first year as a trespass offering. But the former days shall be lost because his separation was defiled. After shaving his head, after offering the appropriate sacrifices, the man could start over fulfilling the length of his vow, but he lost the days that he had put in leading up to his violation. God allowed for some provision for him to continue his vow, but he basically had to start over again. Now, when the Nazarite's vow was completed, verse 13 describes what follows. Priests would burn a burnt offering, and then a sin offering, then a peace offering, then a grain offering, then a drink offering. Five Levitical sacrifices. You can see how important this vow was in the life of the people. It was quite a barbecue. And verse 18 tells us, then the Nazarite shall shave his consecrated head at the door of the tabernacle of meeting, and shall take the hair from his consecrated head and put it on the fire, which is under the sacrifice of the peace offering. He needs to shave his hair that has been growing long, and then he takes it and he puts it under the peace offering, and it burns up in the peace offering. You see, a man's hair was always symbolic of his strength and his honor. You remember the story of Samson. When he shaved his head, he lost his strength. Man's hair was a symbol of his strength and his honor. The peace offering spoke of our fellowship with God, the peace that we can have with God. So when this man lays down his strength under the peace offering, in essence, he's saying that all of his strength and all of his honor comes from his fellowship with God. It comes from his relationship with God. Beautiful imagery here. And the priest shall take the boiled shoulder of the ram, one unleavened cake from the basket, and one unleavened wafer, and put them upon the hands of the Nazarite after he has shaved his consecrated hair. And the priest shall wave them as a wave offering before the Lord. They are holy for the priest, together with the breast of the wave offering and the thigh of the heave offering. And you remember what they did with a wave offering? They waved it. Do you remember what they did with a heave offering? They heaved it. Boy, you guys are smart tonight. After that, the Nazarite may drink wine. His vow now has been completed. And this is the law of the Nazarite who vows to the Lord the offering for his separation. And besides that, whatever else his hand is able to provide, according to the vow which he takes, so he must do according to the law of his separation. Verse 22. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Aaron, speak to Aaron and his sons, saying, this is the way you shall bless the children of Israel. Say to them, and here the Lord gives to Moses to give to Aaron a blessing, a priestly blessing that the high priest will speak over the people. And this blessing becomes a hallmark in the history of Israel. For centuries afterwards, before and after every sacred assembly, at the close of every evening and morning sacrifice, during times of national emergency, each time the high priest addresses God's people, he uses this very blessing. In fact, every Sunday morning at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, Pastor Chuck closes his service with a musical version of this same priestly blessing. I might even teach it to you tonight. And here is the priestly blessing that lasted for centuries. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. What a wonderful blessing. God always wants his people to be reminded that his intentions toward them are to bless them and keep them and be gracious to them. Did you know that's God's intentions to you? To bless you and keep you and be gracious towards you. When God looks down upon us, he lifts up his countenance. In other words, he smiles. Did you know that? that when God watches you, there is a smile on His face, not a frown. He takes joy in you, and He desires to give you His peace. This is why God wants us to rest assured that He is a blesser, not a bouncer. And that's why we need to hear this blessing over and over and over again. Verse 27 tells us, "So they shall put my name on the children of Israel, and I will bless them." Now, when my kids were born, I put my name on my kids. They all became Adamses. That's right. And that means something. Adamses don't quit. Adamses don't lie. Adamses don't talk like a sailor and use foul language. Adamses show respect. Adamses fear God. Adamses love Jesus. And because my kids are Adamses, they know that their dad will never, ever abandon them. When I put my name on my kids, I gave them some guiding framework to live by. They became Adamses. But I also gave them another name. One of them got Zach. One of them got Natalie. One of them got Nicholas. One of them got Mac. And this means that though they're an Adams, they're also individuals that have to make their own choices and live their own lives and plot their own course. And as they make those choices, I trust that they're doing so guided by the values that are true of all Adamses. Now, when God puts His name on His people, He places us under His authority. He assures us of His love. He provides us common values. We are now all Christians. We all share that name, don't we? And we should have Christian values. But that name doesn't stifle our individuality. For though we are Christians, we all still have to make personal choices. We're called by God to plot our own course and find our own place. But again, we do so without violating what it means to be a Christian. And so thus, God puts His name on Israel, and His name becomes her greatest blessing. Chapter 7 tells us, "Now it came to pass when Moses had finished setting up the tabernacle, that he anointed it and consecrated it and all its furnishings and the altar and all its utensils. So he anointed them and sanctified them. Then the leaders of Israel, the heads of the fathers' houses who were the leaders of the tribes and over those who were numbered, made an offering. And they brought their offering before the Lord, 6 covered carts and 12 oxen, a cart for every 2 of the leaders, and for each one an ox, and they presented them before the tabernacle. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Accept these from them, that they may be used in doing the work of the tabernacle of meeting, and you shall give them to the Levites, to every man according to his service.' So Moses took the carts and the oxen and gave them to the Levites. 2 carts and 4 oxen he gave to the sons of Gershon, according to their service. And 4 carts and 8 oxen he gave to the sons of Merari, according to their service, under the hand of Ithamar, the son of Aaron the priest. But to the sons of Kohath he gave none, because theirs was the service of the holy things which they carried on their shoulders." Last week, I told you that there would be a test. Do you remember that? And did you study? Did you remember? You're about to be tested. Can you recall the 3 different responsibilities that were given to each of the 3 sons of the Levites or families of the Levites? You remember, what did Gershon carry? Anybody remember? The fabrics, you've got it. The tabernacle curtains and the coverings and the screens. Merari carried what? The frames. Boy, you guys are good. Those were the pillars and the boards and the bars and the sockets and the pegs and the cords. And then Kohath carried the furniture. Great. The Ark of the Covenant, the table of incense, the table of showbread, the menorah, the laver, the altar. Gershon carried fabrics, Merari carried frame, and then the Kohathites carried the furniture. Now, did you remember that, or did we put that on the big screen? Boy, oh boy. Apparently, God allowed the fabric and the frame to be transported on a cart. Thus, they received these different carts and these oxen to pull the carts, but not the furniture. For you remember what happened when David put the ark on a cart. Remember it hit a rock, started to slide off the cart. And when Uzzah, you know what mama gives his son's name, the name Uzzah, but this guy's name Uzzah. And Uzzah reaches up and he grabs the cart, the ark from sliding off the cart. And the moment he does, God strikes him dead. He has touched the holy ark. It was something God never meant for human hands to touch. The ark was carried, and the other pieces of furniture were carried by poles, not a cart. And we've got a picture. And you see the ringlets on the four corners of the ark? It was through these ringlets that they placed poles. And so the ark was always picked up and carried, whereas the fabric, and as was the other pieces of furniture as well, whereas the fabric and the frame, they were placed on the carts and transported on the carts. Here's the application, I think, for us tonight. The ox and the carts represented the technology of the day. And notice God uses technology to accomplish His work to a point. Load the fabric and the frame on a cart. Save yourself some effort and energy. But the furniture, oh, the furniture, the holiest objects, were not to be trusted to technology. The holy things needed a human touch. And thus God wanted them to be shouldered by holy men and carried on the poles, transported by foot. This is why listening to a sermon on the internet is no substitute to coming to church. When it comes to the holy things, technology can help, but it should never be a substitute for human touch. An email prayer list will never take the place of an actual prayer meeting. Blogs are not the same as Bible studies. Worship in cyberspace is not like worshiping in the holy place. Satellite feeds don't feed the need for real Christian fellowship. Christians should utilize the latest technology, certainly. If tithing records and newsletters and email announcements can be made online, then fine. But don't download the holy things. Don't put the holy things on a cart pulled by oxen. God wants them handled by humans. Well, verse 10 tells us, "Now the leaders offered the dedication offering for the altar when it was anointed. So the leaders offered their offering before the Lord. For the Lord said to Moses, 'They shall offer their offering one leader each day for the dedication of the altar.' And for the next 12 days, this is what occurred. Each day, a different leader from a different tribe offered an identical offering to the Lord." It was the Hebrew version of the 12 days of Christmas. Verse 12 tells us, "And the one who offered his offering on the first day was Nathan, the son of Amminadab, from the tribe of Judah. His offering was one silver platter, the weight of which was 130 shekels, and one silver bowl of 70 shekels, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, both of them full of fine flour mixed with oil as a grain offering. One gold pan of 10 shekels full of incense, one young bull, one ram, and one male lamb in his first year as a burnt offering. One kid of the goats as a sin offering. And for the sacrifice of peace offerings, two oxen, five rams, five male goats, and five male lambs in their first year. This was the offering of Nathan, the son of Amminadab. And for the next 11 days, each of the tribes will pick a leader who will bring an identical offering to the Lord."
In Pastor Sandy's continuing study of the book of Numbers, we find that God provides for His people even as they continue to struggle to trust in His promise for them each day. Their faith tends to be in a bit of a roller coaster ride, yet God continues to love and care for them as they journey through the wilderness. We can learn a lot from the story of the Israelites. You may be facing your own journey where you can't see the promised land. Thanks to this story, though, you can trust that God is there beside you, that He's working out a plan for your life that's going to be even better than you could imagine. He will provide what you need each day, and you can draw strength from His promises found in the Bible. We hope today's message on Sandy Adams Radio has touched your life. If you don't yet have a connection to a church family, we'd like to encourage you to seek out a local congregation that can stand by you as you continue on this journey with Jesus. If you're in the Atlanta, Georgia area, we invite you to visit us in person here at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. We have services every Sunday at 9:30 and 11:15 a.m. and Wednesdays at 7 p.m. You'll find location information and directions at our website, sandyadams.org. That's all the time for today on Sandy Adams Radio. We hope today's message has been a blessing to you. Join us next time as Pastor Sandy continues to share insights from the Book of Numbers, right here on Sandy Adams Radio.